our main practice in meditation, as it was for the Buddha, is the practice of mindfulness of breathing, anapanasati. It's a mindfulness practice. The Buddha's path, as he defined it, is a path of mindfulness. The practice of mindfulness will lead us to awakening. Of course, it's extremely important to understand what mindfulness is, according to the Buddha's definition. The more we understand what it is, the more we'll be able to practice it skillfully and know that true happiness that the practice promises us if we make the effort. So one way that we can think about mindfulness is it's a practice of awareness. It's a practice of awareness. It's a practice of awareness in which we are being proactive in terms of what we're doing with our awareness. So most people, everybody has awareness. Most people are just letting their awareness go wherever they want to let it go. So awareness is very diffused and dispersed. In practicing mindfulness, we're proactively putting our awareness in a place where we choose to put it. So in practicing right mindfulness, we're putting our mindfulness on the objects of mindfulness as the Buddha defines them. Begins with mindfulness of the body, which begins with mindfulness of the breath. So breath meditation is a practice of mindfulness in which we're proactively putting the mind, keeping the mind to the best of our ability on the breath. As I said in the meditation, how do we do that? How do we do that? You know, for years I didn't understand how we did it. Once I understood how we do that and what mindfulness is in that effort, I was able to strengthen my mindfulness, strengthen my breath meditation, strengthen my concentration. So we do that, we put our attention on the breath or whatever object we choose to put our attention or awareness on by using directed thought. The mind just doesn't go to the breath on its own. Gradually it'll start to incline as we train it, but we have to train it. And the way that we train it is using directed thought. We tell ourselves, focus on the breath, focus on the breath. Focus on the breath at the nostril, or you use an image, or whatever you do. So mindfulness is a practice of awareness in which we're being proactive in putting our attention on the object. It begins with mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the breath. It's a form or practice of awareness in which we're being proactive and purposeful. So these are the two sort of defining characteristics of mindfulness. It's the Buddha's mindfulness, which is different than sort of the cultural definition, the psychological definition. That's fine, but it's different than what the Buddha taught. Within the confines of the Buddha's teachings, mindfulness is a practice of awareness in which we're being proactive. We're proactively putting our attention, our awareness on an object, beginning with the breath and the body. And we're doing that out of, there's a purpose behind that, right? And we are doing that with a sense of purpose. There's a quality of intent or intention. We put the attention on the object, on the body, on the breath, and being mindful of the breath, our purpose is happiness. We do that because it's a path, it's an action that's going to lead us to a greater happiness in this life, right? So that's metta, We do it out of compassion. So those are the two primary intentions that inform our proactive practice of mindfulness, of placing our awareness on an object. It's really part of the process of remembering, right? If we think of mindfulness as a remembering, we're remembering to put our attention, to keep our attention on the object, the breath, the body, and we're remembering why we're doing that, remembering our sense of purpose. I'm doing this out of compassion for myself. This is a path that leads to the end of suffering. I'm doing this out of loving kindness for myself. This is a path that leads to true happiness. So the Buddha's teaching on mindfulness is grounded in mindfulness of the body, right? And that is begins with mindfulness of the breath. We practice mindfulness of the breath as a way of keeping our attention on the body. We choose one place where the breath is reasonably comfortable. We stake our claim there in the body, in the present moment. So in being mindful of the breath and the body, we're being very proactive. We're being proactive, right? The more proactive you are, the stronger your concentration is going to get. If you're less proactive, the mind is just going to go where it wants to go, right? If you're more proactive, your concentration will develop. And if you're more purposeful, your concentration will develop. So the stronger your quality of intention is, the more you're going to do what's required in order to develop and come to the fruits of that intention. So, in other words, if your sense of purpose in listening to what I'm saying right now is like you have a strong sense of purpose, you're very connected to the truth that listening to what I'm saying and understanding it to the best of your ability is going to inform your capacity to know a greater happiness in this life. If you're connected to that intention, you're really going to listen. If your quality of sense of purpose is, I don't know, maybe, you know, it's like, I don't know, you know, or if that's not that important to you, you know, true happiness and freedom from suffering, then maybe you're not going to listen so carefully. So this is, you know, this is what mindfulness is. You know, this is how we develop mindfulness. This is how we practice mindfulness in a proactive and purposeful way. If we do that, we can develop concentration. But of course, you know, the Buddha's concentration, jhana, is strong concentration. It's like, yeah, if you're not that, you know, interested in being particularly proactive or steeped in a sense of purpose, you might develop some concentration. But if you really want to develop strong concentration, you have to be highly proactive and imbued with a strong sense of purpose. What the teachings of the Buddha would suggest, and you know, what our experience would indicate to us is that in order to develop free and to develop wisdom, we need strong concentration. So there's a real strong imperative and sense of purpose in developing mindfulness of the breath. And then as we practice the other mindfulnesses that the Buddha asks us to practice, you know, the breath and the body is always our foundation. We're doing that from the place of the body and with the breath oftentimes as the center and anchor point. So, you know, we're keeping the mind on the breath, on the body, on the breath, on the body, because this is a path that leads us to the end of suffering and to a greater happiness. So much of what we do in the service of practicing the other mind kinds of ways of mindfulness are really efforts that we make to understand and abandon what we're doing that's taking us out of the present moment, you know, that's taking us away from the body and the breath and the heart. So as we're developing our mindfulness of breath and body, you know, we're often faced with obstacles. We're often faced with obstacles in that effort. So the Buddha realized that, this is why in many ways, the kind of the next mindfulness that you practice, following on mindfulness of breath and body, is mindfulness of the obstacles to doing that. So you have to notice the obstacles that present themselves as you're making an effort to stay in the meditation with the breath and the body. So this is another mindfulness practice that is essential to the path, which is mindfulness of the obstacles to keeping the mind on the breath and the body, awareness of those obstacles, which of course is mindfulness of the hindrances. Mindfulness of the hindrances. So this is a very specific kind of mindfulness, form of awareness that I'm going to talk about today, that we practice in a proactive and purposeful way. We practice this, you know, we make a proactive effort to be mindful of the hindrances, to notice, to be aware of when we're having difficulty keeping the mind on the breath. And we do this in the service of compassion for ourselves and loving kindness for ourselves, because our capacity to keep the mind on the breath and in the body is what's going to enable us to develop concentration, which is what's going to enable us to develop wisdom, which is going to enable us to find true happiness in this life. So when we're having difficulty keeping the mind on the breath, the Buddha said, be aware of what the hindrance is presenting an obstacle. And he said, it's invariably going to be either desire, aversion, desire for some kind of sense pleasure. I want, you know, to look at the cell phone. Aversion, I don't like the meditation, dullness, the mind that's dull or sleepy, the mind that's restless, the mind that's overactive and that's pouring out lots of thoughts, and then doubt in ourselves and doubt in the practice. So when we're having difficulty practicing mindfulness of the breath, we look to be aware, to be mindful of what's getting in the way. So the Buddha taught this mindfulness of the five hindrances, and then what I really encourage focusing in on is the other form of being mindful of the hindrances that he taught, which is mindful of the two hindrances, which are the hindrances of dullness and restlessness. So those hindrances, the mind that's dull, the ways that we go into dullness, the ways that we allow ourselves to follow and chase after thoughts, the restless mind, those are hindrances that are rooted in delusion, right? They're rooted in delusion. So we go into those hindrances when we don't want to be present, right? So they have a real purpose for us. Dullness has a real purpose for us. All those thoughts have a real purpose for us. They take us out of the present moment. So we have a strong tendency to go into those states when we don't want to be present. So as we make this effort to be present in meditation, the mind is going to resist, right? The mind is going to resist the present moment, being in the present moment, and invariably, we're going to go into one of those states, right? We're going to go into one of those states, either dullness or restlessness. So this is a very important, pivotal. This is a pivotal teaching, within the confines of the Dhamma, what the Buddha taught, and he emphasized this again and again and again. It's pivotal in our efforts to know freedom and happiness. We have to be mindful We have to be aware of these two hindrances. So I'm going to kind of take a look at what that means and how we develop that skill. It's critical to our practice. It's critical to our practice because, you know, I mean, if you think about it, you know, I mean, if you're an ardent meditator, this is a group ostensibly for ardent meditators, practitioners, you know, you're meditating every day, and chances are every day you're going into either dullness or restlessness. You know, what are you doing about it? You know, what are you doing about it? Are you doing anything about it? You know, your capacity to do something about it and to do something about it in a skillful way is what's going to enable you to develop as a meditator. You know, and really, of course, you know, we're not just meditating to be meditators. We're meditating to find freedom and true happiness in life. So what you're doing vis-a-vis, you know, dullness and restlessness in the meditation is really important, is really important. I think for me, in my meditation practice, I usually try to resist, people are going to say, who's he kidding? I usually try to resist making dramatic statements. Because I remember, like, when I first started meditating and you know, and listening to teachers, you know, and particularly, like, the Thai Ajahns, you know, like, you'd listen to an Ajahn, and, you know, he'd say, this is the most important thing in meditation, you know? And then, like, the next day, he'd talk, be talking about something else, and he'd say, this is the most important thing. And I was like, God, there's a lot of really important things. So, but I would say, like, in my own meditation practice, this is pretty damn close to the most important thing that I've learned, you know, that's enabled me to develop my skill. You know, and enabled me to develop concentration is you know, the effort, you know, and the understanding I've made in the service of that effort, I've developed in the service of that effort in terms of working, being mindful of these two hindrances. So our practice, of course, is to bring awareness. Well, maybe that's not, maybe I'm being presumptuous there and saying, of course. Of course, so let's even back up. Our practice is to be aware of the hindrance, is to be aware of the hindrance. But I think right there is to be mindful of the hindrance in a proactive and purposeful way, right? But I think this is probably, you know, this is kind of the nexus of this talk, you know, because I think, you know, this is where we really need to, you know, and this perhaps might seem like a refined teaching, and it is, but I think this is where we have to, we really have to kind of look at what we're doing. So our practice is to bring awareness to the hindrance, right? This is mindfulness, right? It's a practice of awareness, right? Proactively being aware of the hindrance. I'm being aware of the hindrance of dullness or restlessness, and I'm doing that with a sense of purpose because this is going to enable me applying these skillful means in regard to these hindrances is going to enable me to develop concentration, which is going to enable me to develop wisdom, which is going to enable me to be free. So there's a real sense of purpose. So our practice is to bring awareness to the hindrance in a proactive and a purposeful way. So, but again, this is really the key point here, is that this practice is a practice of awareness, right? It's a practice of awareness. We're being aware of the hindrance. We're being aware of the hindrance. So, our tendency is to relate to the hindrance in a way in which we are doing something other than simply applying awareness, right, to the hindrance. So, I mean, one thing that we might do is just give into it, right? So, you know, the hindrance might be there, and we may have some sense of it there being dull, and we just might kind of allow ourselves just to get drift off, or there may be lots of thoughts, and we may just allow ourselves to follow those thoughts, right? So, or the flip side of that is we may have a sense of the hindrance being there, and instead of putting our emphasis, if you will, on bringing awareness to it, we may try to get rid of it, right? We may try to get rid of it. So, you know, this tendency to want to get rid of the hindrance may seem skillful. It may be skillful, but often it's not. So we may try to get rid of the hindrance if we're dull by opening the eyes, or back in the day, people would stand in the meditation, or you know, by applying these antidotes. Or if the mind is very restless, we might see the hindrance. It's like, oh my God, there's the hindrance of restlessness, and I'm going to do mental noting. In with the in-breath, out with the out-breath, Buddha. Or we might do deep breathing or whatever. But what tends to happen is we're bypassing awareness, right? So there's a modicum of awareness in that, you know, we're seeing the hindrance there, but we're not really being aware of the hindrance. We're just kind of pushing it away. So, you know, and often this pushing away is driven by some kind of an aversion to the hindrance, right? You know, is driven by an aversion to it, some disliking of it. It's like, ah, damn, there's the dullness, you know? Keep going into those thoughts, you know? So there's some form of aversion or disliking it. Sometimes it's pretty aggressive, you know, the pushing it away. You know, it's really driven by, you know, a strong aversion to it. You know, at the very least, there's oftentimes a non-acceptance of the hindrance, right? So this can be really subtle too, you know, and it can be cloaked by the effort that we're making to do mental noting or open the eyes or whatever we're doing. We do that and we don't even see that, you know, that's driven, or there's an element there of aversion, of disliking the hindrance. So often the pushing away is driven by aversion, or it's imbued with aversion. You know, when we're not able to abandon the hindrance or get rid of the hindrance, you know, I keep opening my eyes, but the hindrance is still there. Damn it, you know, or I'm doing the mental noting and the hindrance is still there. Damn it, right? You know, when we're not able to get rid of it, there tends to be aversion. I mean, this is what happened. You know, this may seem like, man, this guy's really in the weeds here. You know, this is like, you know, but this is like sort of what is happening in your meditation. If you're anything like me, right? You know, this is what's happening to people in the meditation. And then people say, I don't like meditation. I wonder why. You know, I wonder why. Or I'm not getting any place. You know, it's like you're not going to develop concentration if the meditation is driven or imbued with these subtle sense of aversion or disliking or pushing and trying too hard or giving up, you know, not caring, you know, which is just the other side of the same thing. And we kind of talked about that a little bit here a couple of weeks ago or last week. So when we're having a hard time getting rid of the hindrance, there tends to be non-acceptance or aversion to that. And then there tends to be doubt. You know, there tends to be doubt. I can't do this. This doesn't work. You know? So, you know, for some people, these are quite strong states. For other people, they're more subtle. You know, they're more subtle. But, you know, doubt, from my perspective, as a teacher with students, but also within myself, is quite prevalent, you know? Doubt is quite prevalent, you know? And, you know, over the years, I've certainly had people who've told me, I don't have any doubt, you know? If you don't think you have doubt, you know, well, let me back up on that. It's usually the people who don't think they have doubt who have the most. That's my perspective, you know? Take it or leave it. But, you know, I mean, I certainly see that in myself is, you know, when I think that I've eliminated doubt, you know, that sort of, that construct is usually a construct that, you know, that I'm fabricating because, you know, there's doubt there that I just don't have the stomach to look at or be aware of. And it's like, you know, I just want to be free of it, you know. But you know, doubt isn't eliminated until a high level of practice, stream entry. So unless we have stream enters here, you know, you got doubt, you know? You got doubt, and it's manifesting in that daily meditation, and it's usually manifesting in regard to the struggle that you're having with the hindrances, and it's usually manifesting in regard in the struggle that you're having to the two hindrances. So our practice is a practice of being mindful of the hindrance, which means bringing awareness to it. Bringing awareness to it, right? So it's sort of like, you know, that can be a subtle process, right? So it's like, you know, we got 25 people here, 24 and myself, and everybody's listening to some extent, and everybody's aware of the screen and the other. You know, but you know, there's a difference to some extent there, in terms of, you know, the quality of awareness, right? So, you know, we could just take a finger snap or a second or two and just be aware of this construct of being here. You see that? You see the difference between. You know, because what happens is, you know, I start talking and we start going into our heads and you're thinking about the talk or you're thinking about when is it going to be over? God, when is it going to be over? You know, or what am I going to do? Or what, you know, sort of like, so, you know, there's a real difference there between, you know, sort of where we were before I said be aware of where you are. You know, it's why Tenisaro Bhikkhu says, you know, just feel the breath when I give the Dharma talk so that you can be here. So, you know, this is what we're asked to do in regard to the hindrance, is bring that same kind of awareness to it. But we're not usually doing that. What we're doing with the hindrance is similar to what we were doing before I said, be aware of being here right now in this moment, right? So the practice is bring awareness, just awareness to the hindrance. So, you know, what that has to include, of course, is, or your capacity for there to be an awareness that's pure awareness is a function of equanimity. In fact, that's the Buddhist definition of equanimity. There's pure awareness. So there has to be a little bit of space, right? There has to be just a little bit of space. And usually what's happening when the hindrance arises is the space closes down. The space closes down, or there just isn't any space. There isn't any space. I mean, that's what's happening. And when there's a hindrance, your space is closing down. You know, when there's dullness, there's not enough energy to support there being any space. You know, and when there's restlessness, the mind is so pressed up against what it's thinking about that there's no space. You know, so in bringing awareness to it, you're stepping back from it for a second or a finger snap, right? And you're observing it, as the Buddha says, like one person observing another, where a person standing observing a person sitting on a chair, or a person sitting on a chair observing a person lying on the floor. And there's a quality which is a component of that equanimity of acceptance of the hindrance. Right? And sometimes we've talked about this and had some good discussions about this in this group. You know, sometimes you have to nudge that acceptance a little bit. Can there be acceptance of this hindrance? You know? So we're just bringing awareness to the hindrance for a moment. There's a moment of awareness, a moment of awareness. Maybe it's a second or two. It's not a long awareness. You know, most of the awarenesses that comprise mindfulness are just a second or two, other than what? The mindfulness of the breath and the body, right? Those are the anchor points. And we bring awareness to other things like the hindrances for a second or two, because after a second or two, the space closes down. So there's just, you know, and this is, of course, you know, an early practice of awareness. So it's just a moment or two when there's just awareness and we're not doing anything, right? We're not doing anything except being aware. We're not doing anything. We're not trying to get rid of the hindrance. We're not thinking about the hindrance. We're just bringing awareness to the hindrance. I mean, this is perhaps part of our good nature. We want to do something. I got to do something about that's me. Like, I got to do something about it. You know, where the other side of that coin is, screw it. I can't, there's nothing I can do about this. You know, so it's sort of like, you know, there's that moment of awareness where there's acceptance and we're not doing anything except being aware. We're not thinking about it. We're just being aware of the hindrance. So in a moment of awareness, a moment is all we need, a moment of awareness that can be understanding, you know? And we allow there to be understanding. We allow the knowing quality, the heart, the citta, to understand the hindrance. So when I like to say, we see from the heart. You know, we don't relate to the hindrance from the head, we relate to the hindrance from the body. It really, the Thais would say right here, from the citta, from the heart, right in the middle of the chest. You know, we allow the knowing quality to apprehend the hindrance. We let there be knowing. You know, it's just like, again, if we want to use, you know, the analogy of this moment, you know, there can be awareness of this moment and a knowing of this moment. Can we know this moment in the heart? It's there's just a moment and then the mind starts thinking about the moment, right? Right? There's just a moment of knowing this moment in the body. Sometimes we call it a felt sense, which is somewhat accurate. You know, there's just a moment of knowing this moment. I mean, it's pretty damn heavy, right? I mean, it's profound, this moment, you know? I mean, it's all right there. You know, but then we start thinking about it, right? And then it's like we kind of lose it. But there's just a moment, and that's what we're striving for in our practice, is these moments of knowing. So we allow there to be knowing in the heart. You know, this knowing in the heart is, you know, this quality of knowing in the heart is imbued with wisdom, right? So it's wisdom. So the heart understands that the hindrance is preventing us from concentration, and thereby preventing us from wisdom, you know, discernment, understanding of the Four Noble Truths, and release from our suffering and finding true happiness in this life. The heart understands that. You know, so that in that moment of awareness, we're creating a space where the heart, where we can begin to develop that understanding that's in the heart. What we call the drawbacks of the hindrance. I mean, that's light years different than, oh my God, it's a hindrance. I'm not going to be able to develop concentration, or there's drawbacks to this hindrance, right? You know, we're understanding, the heart's understanding of the drawbacks of the hindrance is what we're trying to connect to in that moment of awareness. In that moment of awareness. in the heart. As we bring awareness to the hindrance, there's wisdom, there's understanding in terms of the drawbacks of the hindrance, and understanding that transcends intellectual understanding, you know? Transcends intellectual understanding. The intellectual understanding of the hindrance is not going to get you to the place where you're going to develop the kind of concentration you need to develop to find true happiness in this life, right? So in the heart, there's that understanding that's transcendent or liberating. It understands the drawbacks of the hindrance, and there's compassion. And there's compassion. And out of that deep wisdom that's in the heart, and the compassion that's in the heart that you're connecting to in those moments of awareness, there can be an abandonment of the hindrances. Ultimately. Ultimately. That's how we put the hindrances. We're able to put the hindrances to the side. So, of course, that's a process, right? That's a process that we develop over time. As we develop the meditation more, there's more equanimity, there's more skill, there's a deeper knowing over time, and there's greater possibility for release. More and more, we abandon the hindrances, not because the teacher told us to, or because we're really good at opening our eyes, you know? It's like, you know, I opened my eyes and I would stand, and I did that for years, you know, and, you know, I got to a certain level, but that's only going to take you so far. Ultimately, the hindrances are abandoned just like any other unskillful quality through wisdom. That wisdom occurs in moments of awareness. So ultimately, this is how we abandon the hindrances, how we're able to develop concentration. So this is pivotal in our ability to develop concentration, jhana, to thereby develop wisdom and find release from suffering and know true happiness. Until we learn to do this, we're only going to get so far in terms of the hindrances. You know, and again, I know this is like, seems like a rather mundane subject, the hindrances, but it's so pivotal in the teachings. It's one of the most important teachings that the Buddha gave. So, another way to kind of posit this, and I'll end kind of with this, is that, you know, the hindrances are a place of learning, right? We tend to think of them as a problem, you know, but really they're a place where we're asked to learn. You know, they're a place where we're asked to learn. You know, we're learning how to learn, for one thing. We're learning how to bring awareness, and we're learning what needs to be learned about the hindrances, about the mind, about how we resist being present, about how we cause ourselves suffering and can come to the end of it. We're often in such a hurry, and maybe there's a quality of desperation that we sometimes have to change our experience. To change our experience of life, if it's the hindrances or all the other experiences of life that are unpleasant and difficult. You know, we're in such a hurry, or we want so much to change those experiences or get away from them, that we don't give ourselves the opportunity to understand them. We're so desperate to change our experience, we don't give ourselves the opportunity to understand our experience, but our ability to change our experience of life and to know happiness depends upon our ability to understand our experience. So our practice is to have a deeper understanding of things like the hindrances, beyond an intellectual understanding, and that understanding comes from awareness, from bringing awareness to our experience. This understanding is the way to happiness. It's the path to true happiness. It will lead us to happiness in this life. So let's close our eyes for just a second.